Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's Tuesday, July 24th, 2012. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. We have a great list of guests in the house tonight. Jen Schwartman from Blind Tiger.
Hi, Jimmy.
Mike Kinslick from Copperseed Distilling, and Matt and Justin from Sycamore Bar in Brooklyn. And we're sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. Thanks to them, check out the Beer Cloud, a mobile app to help you locate your favorite beers at GreatBrewers.com. We're supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, over 40 New York City good beer bars that serve and promote good beer. GoodBrewSeal.com. All right. The reason we have Mike Kinslick in the studio tonight is we're talking about breweries that also distill, and also the growing small distillery movement in America. On our end, our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com, here in New York, known as Union Beer, is now selling limited small spirits. And we've been hosting some events with small spirits with Modern Distillery Age. Greg Glazer, who is wearing both hats, he'll be with us later. He's an editor of Yankee Brew News, and he's also the editor-publisher of Modern Distillery Age. So there's a growing connection between craft beer and craft spirits. And Justin and Matt at Sycamore, they're one of the great bars that has really good beers and really good spirits. So we're kind of setting the framework for tonight. So Mike, tell us about you did a white paper. You did some research as you were opening your distillery, which you just got licensed today. Congratulations. You're going to be in New Paltz area of New York. So tell us how you got started and your interest in opening a small distillery.
Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for having me here. So I actually had worked for a professor when I was in graduate school who had done research on the craft brewing market. So I had seen how that market had developed from one initial firm, Anchor Steam Brewing out in California, to today over 2,000 craft brewers in the United States with about 9% of the U.S. beer market by dollar sales over the last 45 years. Incredible trend. And I started to see in the mid-2000s, early 2000s, similar things developing on the craft spirits side. I also happened to have a friend who was knowledgeable about distilling, and he had been talking about starting a craft distillery for quite some time. I put the two together, and in the process of doing the research for my own distillery, Coppersea, just started to look at the development of the craft spirits market, and it is following the craft brewing market almost leg for leg. So currently about 240 craft distillers in the United States, some of whom are, as we're talking about, also craft brewers, Anchor Steam first and foremost among them. I'm hopeful that in the next 5, 10, 15 years, we'll start to see a plethora of new craft distillers, just like on the craft beer side.
So there's some places we know, like Ballast Point, Dogfish Head, even in Japan, Hitachino. There's a lot of breweries that are also distilling. What's the connection between beer and distilling?
Well, sure. So if you're going to make any kind of grain-based distillate product, vodka, gin, whiskeys, you have to make a beer first. So you make a grain alcohol, fermented grain at about 5% alcohol, and then that gets put into your stills and comes out the other end as something you either barrel or water down for a vodka type product.
All right, Jen, do you know a lot about small distilleries or spirits?
Mike was saying he knows 20 different breweries who are also micro distilling, and I certainly am not familiar with that many. I'd love to see that list, but I've been a fan of this movement for a long time. And when I was in Colorado years ago, mid-90s, friends in the industry, in the beer industry, and I were kind of sitting back and we'd speculate about what the next trend was going to be. And we all named micro distillation going hand in hand. And yet I'm not exactly sure why it took so long for that to finally take hold, but I'm so glad it has.
So Mike, you're at, so we have, you know, in the beer industry, we have the Craft Brewers Conference. What's the similar conference for distillers that you went to?
So the lead trade and gathering organization in the craft distilling movement right now is the American Distilling Institute, headed up by Bill Owens. And he was actually also involved in the craft beer market. He started the first brew pub in California and was later an organizer of a craft beer trade group as well in the late 80s. So he's seen both trends as well. Very interesting fellow. What people don't quite maybe think about is that craft beer took 20 or 15, 25, 30 years to really take a deep hold in the landscape. Fritz started Anchor Steam. He took over at Anchor Steam in 1965, and it wasn't until probably 1990 that there were more than a few hundred craft brewers in the United States, and now, again, you have 2,000. So think about it this way. Last year, there were more new craft breweries opening in the United States than there are currently craft distilleries in total. So even with that many craft breweries open already, people are still seeing opportunities to get into that market.
So Justin and Matt, you at Sycamore, you guys are in Brooklyn.
Right.
You're an awesome beer and spirits bar. What are some of the breweries that you see are also making distilled products?
Matt knows actually more than I do on this, but some that we see are, I mean, there's also Rogue, which is a very large brewery, which they started their distillery actually fairly recently, like maybe a few years ago.
Yeah, a few years ago. Stockfish Head, which, I mean, they've been distilling for quite some time, but you can really only get it at the brew pub and distillery, I guess, they're in the same location.
They were actually really pushing their rum, of all things. Yeah. Like, the others were numbered bottles. I had a bottle of gin. I heard a tale of a tequila batch they did one time. So they've been really small, but then they were really, like, they were distributing, I think, some of the rums.
Right.
I definitely saw a few, like, there's a couple of events they've done in the city where they brought bottles out along with the beer, and you can kind of, like, they were doing, I remember, Barcade once, they're doing martinis with the gin, which is awesome. Really, really great stuff.
I mean, even when it comes to, like, Anchor, their distilling company is also probably, like, only, like, 5-10 years old, and their two biggest products, which people don't, like, aren't familiar with, is a Juniper and the Genevieve, which you see that, like, at almost every bar, restaurant in the city, but you don't realize that's an Anchor product.
Believe it or not, 20 years they've been distilling.
20 years.
1993.
Old Potrero is their whiskey, too, and it's really nice. So that's another label that you wouldn't necessarily associate. You'd see it and you might respect it and love it, but not necessarily make the connection.
Yeah, what I love about this like craft beer and spirits thing is I have a different vision for a really cool bar. And one day I may have spirits at my place, Jimmy's number 43. I may not, but if I did, I would almost want to say you can only buy the spirits if you buy a beer first. So it's like you have to have a beer, then you have to have like either neat or on the rocks one of these fine spirits.
They always say you got to work your way up.
Yeah, you got to work your way up. But it's also this is how I see the connection. I'm, you know, there's a lot of cocktails out there, and it's a different thing. I think with cocktails you can cheat a lot. I think that with cocktails there's a lot of sweeteners. You know, there's a way to put your booze in a, it's easy to drink a cocktail. And I feel like what am I trying to say is that I really respect the specialty spirits that we're tasting. There's a lot of good ones. We do some events with Greg Glazer. He'll be on soon from Modern Distillery Age. And it's just amazing to have, you know, certain spirits just neat or on the rocks. And I know that's not popular, but I feel like that's the way to drink them.
I have some friends from the Blind Tiger, some regulars, Michael and John, who have decided, taken up gin as their passion. And they've been traveling and collecting micro-distilled gins from around the country. And they went out to Portland, Oregon, and they came back with like 8 or 9 different gins that were only from that region. And then they throw a tasting where all they do is like lightly chill it. And we all try them like in sequence, not side by side. But you really do get to zero in. And when you're talking about gin, the botanicals, so like far reaching.
It's one reason we wanted Mike on the show tonight with Copper Sea. I feel like you're coming from a very craft, you know, orientation. Like, what do you want to do with your product? You're not just talking about making whiskey. You're doing something very special.
So we think it's important to be really heritage methods distilling from the farm to the bottle. So we're going to use only wood fermentation tanks, no steel, let alone plastics. We're going to use local water on site from a well right in front of our distillery. We are going to use hand-fired small pot stills, so no columns. And we think that that'll enable us to really capture some of the deeper flavor tones in the grains that we're putting into the stills, as well as eau de vie and other more craft-driven products.
And are you going to do like specific batches of specific grains?
So what we're intending to do is single farm source batches. So we want to do longitudinal and latitudinal sets. So latitudinal set of different corn spirits from different farms in the region to capture the different flavors in the bottle. And then we want to age those and do longitudinal sets so you capture the flavor in the barrel as the spirit changes over time.
So you're really talking about doing a serious project. And for background, your partner, who's the distiller, where has he worked before?
So he comes from a tradition of folk distilling. His name is Angus MacDonald, and he has a lot of tales to tell about how he acquired the knowledge of distillation, but I won't share
those. But did he work at Tuttletown at any point?
No.
He never did?
No. We know those guys well, of course. And
so he knows the Tuttletown guys?
Oh, yeah.
So you're talking about a spirit of the quality of Tuttletown, a.k.a. Hudson whiskey, or even better than that?
Well, I hate to compare. I mean, they're doing what they're doing, and we're doing what we're doing, and I hope we'll have...
But you have to.
You know, we'll leave that to others. I think I have mad respect for Ralph and what they've been able to do, and I think they're... obviously, they've achieved extraordinary success doing what they're doing, and we'll see what we can do.
So, Copper Sea Distilling, you guys are going to be based in New Paltz, West Park, New York, and you guys will be making products soon in the fall.
Very soon.
Next couple months. Keep your eyes peeled. We have to take a short break. We'll be back with Greg Glazer. We'll talk more about brewing and distilling on Beer Sessions Radio.
So I could love you twice as much as I do. I'd have four loving arms to embrace you, four eyes to idolize you each time I face you. With two hearts twice as true, what couldn't four lips do? When four ears hear you say that I'm yours, da da da. I wish that I were twins, you great big baby kins, so I could love you twice as much as I do.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Did you know that Heritage Radio Network is now a 501c3 nonprofit? Hey, it's just like public radio. HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can donate. You can become a member and go check it out. Well, here we are in the studio at Roberta's in Bushwick. And Jen Twertman and Mike Kinslick, we were just talking about some small spirits. But right now we're drinking the one of my
bottle.
Favorites. What is it? Cantillon, the Iris 19, was it 2007?
07, yes.
07. When I hear 7, it's either 87, 97, 2007.
It's all a blur at this point.
So, Jen, you were at Cantillon not too long ago.
Yeah, I was there, and I brewed with Jean one day in February this year. So I had the pleasure of drinking this beer and seeing how it's made. And Mike talking about his, artisanal liquor and how he's going to be doing it in wood barrels and things reminds me of all the old equipment and the tradition of Cantillon. So that's what's really exciting about what he's doing, I think, over some of the other micro distillers, is meticulously artisanal. Trying to make it, use some of these traditional approaches to distillation.
That's brilliant. And we have Greg Glazer. Greg, how are you?
Hey, Johnny, I haven't seen you in what, years, I guess.
Greg's the editor. Not, you're the editor of Yankee Brew News, but also the publisher editor of Modern Distillery Age. So you're one of the few guys who have 1 foot in craft beer and 1 foot in craft distilling.
They're both very wet.
Yeah, you're coming off a little funny, but we're still going to talk a little bit. We're talking about craft beer and distilling. What are some of the breweries that you know that are also making fine distilled spirits?
Well, the first two that jump into my mind are on two opposite sides of the country. We've got Rogue, and they've been distilling for quite a while out in Oregon. And then on the other side of the country here in New England, we've got the folks in Rhode Island, in Providence. Newport Storm is the brewery side, and they've got Thomas Two Rum as their first distilled brand.
So when did you first get involved with distilled spirits? Because you've been the editor for Yankee Brew News for a while. When did Modern Distillery Age start?
I had been, as you said correctly, with Yankee Brew for a long time, since about 1994, and then with All About Beer magazine, where I still write a couple of columns since 99. And because of that, some folks I met in the trade publication business in New York City asked me to write some spirit stories around 2001, and I became more and more conversant with distilled spirits. And it was in 2009 that I formed and started publishing Modern Distillery Age as a weekly trade magazine newsletter for the spirits business.
All right. So go for it. We got Mike. Mike has just got licensed for Carpathia Distilling in New Paltz.
I was just going to mention a couple of other brewers who also distill. One is McMenamin's out in Oregon. And they, I think, don't actually distribute their product at all. I think they sell it all at their own hotel properties in the area. And the other, doing your bi-coastal thing, Greg, is 888 in Massachusetts. They have a wide range of distilled spirits products. I think vodka, rum, gin, whiskeys.
Oh, yeah. They're Cisco is the brewery, right?
Yes. Right, Cisco. Okay, that's right, yeah.
Wow. Well, we lost Greg because his connection was really bad. But
hopefully, Matt, we'll get him back.
What did you talk? You're a genius, the young genius here. He works at Beercraft, and he's also working at Sycamore now in Brooklyn. Tell us what you know about all this stuff.
I mean, there's a lot. I've been working now with just beer for a long time, so I haven't had a chance to have a lot of these spirits. And a lot of the distilleries we're talking about in breweries, they're on the West Coast, and it's hard enough getting, like, McMinnis. You can't get their beer out here, and it's really tough. But there's... we were talking a little bit earlier about Aventinus and the Schneider Brewery in Germany. They don't actually distill their beer, but they make a Weissbach called Aventinus, which is this really very strong, rich wheat beer. And they send it to a distillery near them in Bavaria, and then they distill that spirit and age it in barrels. And I believe the head brewer, someone from the brewery, actually is the one taking care of the spirit once it's in the wood. And they now sell it unaged, and they also sell one, I think it's aged in an old whiskey barrel. And I've had a taste of one I was aged in a wine barrel. And it's crazy because when I think about spirits, it's kind of, you know, you're taking alcohol and you're heating it up and the spirit leaves the liquid and it turns into alcohol, you know, like a more pure refined alcohol. And so you wouldn't expect to kind of see the real roots of the base fermented beverage behind there, but you really can taste a little bit of the phenolic clove and banana flavor from the base wheat beer, even if after it's been aged. It's like a really it's really crazy. It's not something you'd expect, and maybe it's because it's such an assertive beer to begin with.
What do you call that? What do you call the what? How do you categorize something like that? Since it's it sounds so different from anything
trace
else.
Elements. Yeah. I mean, I noticed this too. Where when you have like Dutch's on another level. Dutch's is upstate and they're making distilled products. They have a peach brandy, so it's the alcohol is totally dry, it's totally clean, but the nose has the hint of peach.
Well, this is really the difference between using traditional pot stills and column stills, which will really strip out a lot of the both bass notes and treble notes, as I think of them, from the spirit and what's going into the pot.
I mean, this is another thing, like Doc's Apple Cider, like they're somewhat, they should be considered a brewery as well as a distillery as well.
I mean, and Warwick?
Yeah, Warwick.
Yeah, Docks and Warwick, yeah. They're Warwick Valley Distilling. You know, they make spirits as well as
cider.
Ciders.
Right.
Yeah, they're really interesting. I mean, what do you guys have to go through? I mean, what I always thought about distilling, I thought they just somehow pushed a button and you got vodka. I mean,
like magic.
Yeah. I mean, that's how it's always been. Magic. It's always been, you know, proposed to us. It's a kind of like with beer too. It's like the mainstream beers. It's like it comes out super clean and dry, and it's like you push this button, and there's like, you know, triple distilled vodka, but never really talks about what makes it. And this is the first time I've ever heard anyone talk about, wow, it actually can come from beer. So what does that mean? It comes from like a fermented product. So I could have hard cider and make a spirit with that. I mean, are they Calvados. Really making beer?
That would be Calvados or Applejack.
But are they really making beer, or they're just making like some kind of wort that's slightly fermented?
Well, cider is not going to be beer, right?
But I mean, either way, cider or beer, the base for the distilled product.
So for whiskey making, what we're going
to
use...
Yeah, how far do they go with the beer?
How close is it to beer?
Yeah.
That we know of as beer, because I know that base product is also called beer, right? Which
it
can
is
be
also,
confusing because you think they're just taking a beer, and then, but it's a different recipe, I'm sure.
It is, but it's about 5% alcohol. So it is in that, you know, 5 to 8%. Beer alcohol range. It's grain, fermented grain, not necessarily that you'd want to drink in that format. But then that goes through what we'll do two distillations on that. The first distillation run will take that 5 to 8% alcohol product and take it up to about 25% alcohol. So you lose about, it's about 5 to 1. The next run will take that low wine, as it's called, 25%, up to about 50, 60%. And that's what we'll put into the barrels for aging.
So you'll never go to like the 100. You won't be like making 100% alcohol and then adding
you
water.
You can never. Actually, 90%, the reason Everclear is 190 proof or whatever it is because at that's the point where you can't distill it anymore. The water evaporation and alcohol evaporation are basically simultaneous at that temperature. So
that's when you're making your I don't know what you call the base that you're going to distill. I mean, a wort, I guess. You don't hop it usually, right? I mean, it's just basically, yeah. A couple of years ago, actually, it's like 4 or 5 years ago now, Jerome Ribetes, sorry if I butchered your name, from BFM was in town. Actually, conveniently on my birthday, and we were hanging out at beer table, and he shouts across the bar, Matthew, I think I have something you want to taste, but it's not on the menu. And I said, yes, Jerome, I would like to taste this thing that's not on the menu.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever you got.
Knowing Jerome, yeah.
So he goes to the back, and he comes out with there's bottles are very cute. They're like, look like the short, fat Belgian bottles, but it's got a swing top. He comes out with one of those, and it's this thing called Lagnol, which is a whiskey he makes, but he hops the base, hooch, and then he hops it again before he adds in the barrel, so it's just like kind of like hoppy whiskey that he does, and then he's tells me this is what it is, and the only reason I make it is to age it in a barrel so they can use the barrel to make his beer, the Abbey Saint Bon Chien, which is like a Belgian quad that he gets to age in a bunch of barrels.
So he makes his own barrels.
He makes his own barrels. Beer, yeah.
So there is a multitasking in there.
That's actually like the greatest thing of being like being a brewery and a distillery. Once you start making all these products, you got to age your beers in these casks. There's a lot more you can play around with and be creative with.
Sure.
Wow. Mike, we know that for homebrewing, Jimmy Carter in 1979 made homebrewing legal, and then from that, we have a whole generation of people who are comfortable making beer and a great craft beer scene. And I think there's a connection between it. But can you distill at home?
Legally, you are not allowed to make any distilled products at home, which is not to say that there aren't probably several thousands of hobbyists out there doing that, and it's pretty unlikely that the ATF is going to come after you. There are still some larger-scale moonshiners, illegal alcohol makers, whatever you want to call them, who get prosecuted, but it's pretty rare these days. What I suspect will happen is that given all the favorable changes in legislation we've seen to date, at some point, 5, 10, 15 years down the line, it will become legal to make up to a certain amount of distilled spirits at home.
It's a little more dangerous than brewing, though, isn't it? I mean, I'm asking.
That's kind of a myth. I think if you've got a reasonably well-constructed commercial still, and they come down in sizes all the way down to 5, 10 gallons, it's pretty safe to put that on a stovetop and make stuff out of. But what I've seen developing so far in the market is we've had the first wave of people getting in, many of whom have no real distilling experience. They go take a course, they bootstrap. They get up and running, they get in the market, and they learn by doing. What I think we're going to see next is the second wave. So the people who have worked at these first distilleries, who are then going to go out and do something on their own, who have the knowledge, and that's how the market is going to develop.
Become
its
more refined, yeah. Probably.
Yeah. You see that in beer. You know, all of the states here in the United States where there's actually like a lot of beer breweries now, they're clustered around breweries that have been around for about 20, 30 years. And Michigan's got a really big scene, but, you know, Bell's has been around for about 25 years, and they're all, by and large, people who work there at some point, and sort of, you see that in Italy. You
it's
know,
a
now,
big family.
Yeah.
It becomes a big incestuous family.
Which
sorts.
Is one of the best things about, I think, the beer scene in going on today, and mm-hmm. hopefully with spirits, too. It'd be nice to see, you know, people working together and, you know, moving on and doing things.
Well, that's why you have these nexuses, like in Oregon and northern Washington, and Northern California, and now New York, and once the knowledge sort of, you know, centers in a certain industry
it
in a certain
flourishes.
Area, it flourishes. Yeah, exactly.
So, Justin, I'm glad you mentioned Warwick Valley. I mean, we know them as Doc Cider,
right?
And I always forget. I was at a spirits event recently, and they were there with their Warwick Valley spirits, as well as their Doc's draft.
And they actually didn't say that is where New York Distilling Company started working on their products up in Warwick Valley. They were able to go up there and test spirits out for a while until they finally opened up their location off of Richardson, which is like that attached to the shanty, which they do an incredible job with their gins.
It's a fun place to go to because they make cocktails with the... it's like a brew pub, but it's the liquor equivalent. And at this point, I don't think they've released any whiskey, but they're working on it. They're aging it. And they have been able to release some gin. So there's a very gin-centric type of cocktail menu that's being made. And you can look over from the bar through the windows and see the distillery. I haven't been there when it's actually running, you know, but to see it there,
you know,
it's the same sort of effect as tanks of a brew pub.
Yeah. And I also really appreciate, like, you just mentioned, like, they're aging their whiskey, and they're, like, they're making, I guess, I think they're doing this, like, the old school Northeast rye recipe or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know any specifics. I just know that they were waiting.
They're waiting, but they're aging it, like, a lot of people will try to cut their budget, and they'll just, like, you know, age it for 3 or 6 months, which is, that's what they want to do, that's fine. But doing it, like, a certain way, like, you actually do get more character, especially when it comes to whiskey.
One of my favorite, I have a couple Colorado small distillers that I know of. One is Ska Brewing Company out of Durango, has Peach Street, and they've been doing goat vodka and jackalope gin for a long time, but they actually started with eau de vie because there were a lot of peach orchards and things in that part of Colorado, so they were taking all the excess fruit and making eau de vie first. So they've got quite an operation.
And they were the first craft distillery in Colorado.
Oh, were they? Okay. And now we've got Stranahan's Colorado Whiskey, which is winning awards. And those guys are really interesting. I took a tour a couple years ago. A couple home distillers who had been at it for a while. And they just decided, we're Colorado. We don't have a tradition we need to uphold. Kind of like American craft brewers didn't have a specific heritage they needed to uphold. So they picked apart the process, and they had this custom still made, and they just like have decided they've got this sort of cross. There's no corn in the mash, and they had this hybrid still made that's like, I think they called it either the most efficient bourbon still or the least efficient scotch still around, like crazy stuff.
So, you know. Since you're talking eau de vie, I'm going to throw an international reference in. In 2009, I spent some time in Amsterdam at the Café Velling. It's a great little old bar in the shadow of the Kunst, the Art Museum Hall, or whatever it's called. But the owner, Bas, B-A-S, Bas, he has his own eau de vie products that he makes outside of the city. So if you ever go to Amsterdam, check out Café Velling, ask for Bas. This is a eau de vie, including a traditional Geneva.
And
so there's a great tradition, you know, between... Yeah.
And this is happening in Europe, too, because when I was in Bamberg, I went to Mars Brewery, and you know Stefan from Mars. He's got a still. He's making his own schnapps, which is, you know, the most common, but then he's also doing a whiskey. Very pale in color, but he's playing around. He's got a beautiful little still.
Is he distilling from his beer?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. He's brewing whatever it takes. I mean, he is, it's not like he's, I don't think he's taking his actual recipes that we drink. He's using that equipment, though, to brew his base.
So what do you call that? It's like this base beer. Is it beer?
Beer is what we...
It's beer,
it's
but it's not...
It's confusing because it's not...
It's not sellable beer. It's
not sellable beer.
Yeah.
Probably not.
All right. This is a good group. We have a lot more to talk about. We'll be back in a few minutes here on Beer Sessions Radio.
Think about it.
Every night you'll hear crooning of a Russian lullaby. Just a plain.
You're listening to Russian Lullaby by Plexophonic.
Starts to cry. Rock-a-bye, my baby. Somewhere there may be a land that's free for you and me and a Russian lullaby.
I'm Nicole Taylor, host of Hot Grease. Food is about community, gathering together, enjoying great food and great conversation. That's how I grew up, and that's what I do on my show, Hot Grease. I bring in the community, and we talk food, people, gardening, kids, the South, and more. Join our community by going to the donate button on our website and become a member of the Heritage Radio Network.
All right, here we are back on Beer Sessions Radio. Awesome.
Sorry.
Here we got Jen Schwartman, Blind Tiger. Mike Kins at Copper Seed Distillery. They were licensed today by the feds. And yay. Matt and Justin from Sycamore. Let's talk about Sycamore. Sycamore is a cool bar in Brooklyn. It's been awarded the Good Beer Seal, goodbeerseal.com. You guys have always had good beers. What are some of the beers on draft at
Where
at
are
Sycamore?
You in Brooklyn, by
yeah,
the way?
Yeah, it's a good question.
We're in Ditmas Park. A lot of people don't really know Ditmas Park that well, but it's the south side of Prospect Park.
Okay.
We've been there for about 4 years.
I think that's a Jim Croce song, right?
Yeah.
The south side of Chicago.
Close. Ish.
But yeah, we opened up 4 years ago, and during that time, we didn't notice a lot of American whiskeys available at bars, so we decided to open up just American whiskey bar with craft beers, because we're also beer lovers, and that's turned into just like a full whiskey bar, but we typically have like 70 to 90 American whiskeys, and then probably about another like 15 to 20 other whiskeys.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
I've gone through them all multiple times. They're all fantastic.
So, like, what's my whiskey? And like, I like to have a beer, and I want to have quality spirit with it. So, what if I'm going to Sycamore tonight, you can guesstimate, what's my beer and whiskey flight? I want five beers and five whiskeys.
Five
with
beers.
My friend, Mike.
That's a lot of liquor.
And order a cab, too. Take a cab.
Hey, we're celebrating. You just got licensed as a distiller. You know, come on.
What I'll say for, like, as far as, like, whiskey goes, guys that I really like right now are Kentucky Bourbon Distillers. I always think that they do a fantastic job. They've got typically in Kentucky, there's only 8 distilleries that make, you know, 50, 70, 80, 90 products. The Kentucky Bourbon Distillers, my favorite, are, like, the Black Maple Hill. They do the Johnny Drums, which are great, especially the 101. They do the Pure Kentucky, which is fantastic, the Rowan's Creek, the Noah's Mill. So those would definitely be like my whiskeys that I'd be offering to you guys. And then as far as beers go, I mean, right now on draft, we have some Founders. We have Barrier's back, which is great.
Great news.
Mm-hmm. We have some Bear Republic. We have
some Green Flash.
We change our list up so
frequently. Have you guys, anyone had the new Green Flash Pale Ale? It's called like the Green Flash 30th Street.
Oh,
Third.
Yeah, they've been doing that for a while.
What is that beer? Because you're really tight with them. That's a great pale ale.
I guess it's new to us, probably. We've had it at a couple Blind Tiger events just because we had crazy stuff that we weren't normally getting. But they've been making that for a number of years, and they named it after the 30th Street corridor in San Diego, which is where most of the beer bars of note run north and south along that avenue. And so... or that street. So they made this beer, and it's an American pale. So if you know their product, you know that the West Coast IPA, really, really hoppy, you know, and not for every IPA palate, too. I mean, it goes
it's
pretty far.
Dry
so
dry
yeah, I mean, really dry. Really, I mean, gorgeous beer.
I like that one a lot.
But
that
the pale is like that step back that pale ale is compared to IPA a lot of times, but still nice hop character. Really great beer.
Yeah, I like it too. I had it at Mugs last week. Mugs on Bedford in Brooklyn.
I mean, yeah, I brought a keg in too. We're transitioning from beer craft. We brought a keg in, and sure enough, it got tapped in the weekend. It was well gone by the time I got back on Monday, and it was nobody saved any for me.
So at Sycamore, how many draft lines do you guys have?
We have 8. Yeah,
you have 8,
and 4 outside as well.
Do you have a lot of bottles?
We have about 30 bottles right now.
You have a good, well curated list.
Yeah, we tend to. Especially when Matt's stepping in, the goal is to be switching, like, we'll be changing the lines, like, every line will never be the same beer on the same line once, and the bottles will also be consistently changing.
Question. So. What, like, roughly what percentage do you think do people focus more on the beer there or more on the spirits, or is it 50-50?
It's like 50-50. I feel like it's like, I mean, people definitely come in for their beers, but it's also, we have a big backyard, so I think it's also a summer-winter thing. In the summer, the beer definitely
moves really fast. Yeah,
and in the winter, the whiskey definitely moves.
Sure.
So,
any particular craft distillers that you're featuring or that you see people enjoying?
Well, Anchor, we have some of those, but not right now. No, but there's some that we're actually like talking to that we're possibly going to carry soon, especially on the whiskey side.
Yeah.
So, like some of the newer like New York area distillers, like New York Distilling. I mean, do they sell wholesale? Would you carry their product?
I carry their product as well. Yeah, I love their product.
And then, how do you sell it? Do you sell it mostly just neat? Or on the rocks, or do you make a cocktail with it?
Usually, typically what the customer wants, but I mean, I love it neat on the rocks with like a lemon or a lime.
Well, going back to beer, because you guys are a great beer bar too, and Matt worked at Beercraft. What did you just let me taste? Because this is awesome. It's like a black IPA, right?
Yeah, this is the Firestone Walker Wookiee Jack.
I think it's relatively new.
Yeah, I haven't had it yet.
Yeah,
it's a brand new.
I had it on draft. It's delicious in a bottle, too.
So this is the kind of beer that you'll be carrying
over
at Sycamore. Yeah. I mean, you guys are just what everybody needed, because in Brooklyn, there's so many great neighborhoods, and I know the Windsor Terrace, there's Double Windsor. That's a good beer bar.
Great beer bar.
Good beer seal bar, and you guys are in Ditmas Park. It's just great to see you guys, and I'm glad you're a part of the Good Beer Seal.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Let's Thanks have more of this fire. And what's the other one? The Pretty Things.
This is the Pretty Things Magnifico.
There's a new Captain Lawrence I haven't seen before, too. Yeah, tell us about that one.
That's a real treat, that one. That's the Hops
it's
and Roses.
It's a great label. Yeah. I wish you could see it. Yeah.
It looks like you're on drugs. it's an IPA that was aged in barrels. It's a sour ale, and it's got rose hips, hibiscus, and rose petals in it. So it's a really nice pink color. And I mean, Scotty is one of my favorite brewers, you know, he's been brewing since he was in high school.
Such a great guy.
He's
too.
An awesome dude. And he really, a lot of people like, you know, want to open a brewery and they want to do sour ales. And it's not an easy thing to do, to let things go wrong, in a controlled way. And he's really nailed it. And you know,
he takes it seriously.
He does. And having watched like the bottle releases go, you know, in the past 5 years as he's been doing it, like he's really figured out exactly when the beer's ready to get out of the barrel and get into the bottle and get into somebody's belly.
I had the pleasure of blending three sour beers with Dave Broderick at the old brewery for one of our events, and we were tasting all these samples of the raw material to know how to blend it, and he pulled samples off, and they were from there were several casts piled high, and he hadn't quite refined his technique for tapping like the samples, so it sat in the barrels a little too long, and it had turned to acetone, kind of like nail polish remover, and he's like, well, there goes that, like it was going down the drain, which was a shame, but he had to refine his, he wasn't going to let that become part of his blends by any means, just because it would be a waste.
Have you been to the new brewery?
Not yet. No, I can't wait.
Really, Jen?
No, I haven't made it up.
Wow.
Yeah.
We better go up.
I know. I've got to see it, because now he's up and running and he's got his pilot system, and I'm so excited for him, because he had taken over like another space in the old spot and had expanded slightly his barrel aging, but he was just chomping at the bit to go bigger. So now he got to.
I think it's exciting. I mean, we know that, you know, at Peekskill, Jeff O'Neill's, he's making the cool shit.
He's
going to traditional
sours. We have
sours.
A bunch of Peekskill beer coming to the Tiger this Sunday, too. So if you want to try Peekskill without having to get on a train, come by the Tiger
this Sunday, 3 p.m. June.
Yeah,
July.
He's like six or seven of his beers. We're so excited. He'll be in the house.
That's another great guy. I mean,
another fantastic and so talented. And but so
and so Scott Vaccaro, Captain Lawrence, is making some sour beers.
Yes.
Is he doing it? Does he have a cool ship? Or what is he doing?
He has a cool ship.
He's
doing it. I think most of the base beer is his brown ale, for as far
he's
I can tell.
He's got a couple that he plays
probably,
with,
yeah.
I think, yeah.
And then, you know, you put it in the wood. I mean, cool ships are cool, you know, and if you have a... Like,
Jeff
like
is building one, I guess, at the Peak School, yeah.
I applaud that. It's really amazing. But one of the cool things about, like, American craft brewing and, like, you know, what we did with the wine industry, where we figured out what was going on that the French were doing, and then, you know, they're like, oh, man, yeah, we can do that without, you know, relying on voodoo. We've done that for, the Belgian breweries. Like, if you're Canteon...
So you're saying a cool ship is voodoo?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, yeah, you've got, like...
It's so environmental.
Yeah.
It's so reliant upon that environment, and you can actually now with our technology, I guess, of sorts. You can inoculate
with wild yeast. Like what you're saying, it's like farming. If you're near a road and there's cars with exhaust, that could really screw up your ecosystem for
funny enough products. Though Cantillon is in Brussels proper. I mean, it's not on some countryside, it's not some charming little farm. It just, the whole Brussels region was traditionally fruit orchards, and so there just is a lot of these yeast strains. But people for years I had heard about it before I saw it. They're like, yeah, you picture this beer coming from some farmhouse on some hillside, and it's right in downtown Brussels. So the exhaust is there, and somehow it works in their favor.
It's about the attic where the cool ship is. Yeah.
Well, they've got open windows to the outside, so something's getting in. Yeah.
Mike, when you're doing distilling, do you have to worry about environmental issues, or is it just all in the
still? You raise an interesting point, because we are also hoping to ferment with wild yeast, so to lay down some of our grains and just let whatever ambient yeast strains are floating around inoculated. And we've done some tests on that, and we think we can actually achieve critical mass on the fermentation with that.
That's great.
Wow. I mean, it's that sour mash whiskey is. I don't know how that goes down normally, but when I first started homebrewing, I saw a recipe, and it involved taking yogurt and just throwing it on the grain, much like a Berliner Weiss, which is more, it's like kind of ambient yeast hanging out. But yeah, they're goosing it a little bit with a little external culture, and that's that would be going to make bourbon. You wouldn't drink that on its own.
I just got some pig hindquarters from there's a great farm upstate, Raven and Boar. They're way up by Hudson, and I got some pig hind, like a bunch of pig legs, fresh. And one of the cooks today, he had out some of the feet, because he's going to cook the feet, and a tail. And I thought, would you be able to put tail into a distillate? you've got pumpkin beers. Would you ever make a beer with pig tail?
I don't know.
They make oyster shell and lobster shell beers.
It's different than using meat.
Would you throw in a pig tail into beer? This is a good question. Anybody can answer who wants to.
Bacon bourbon, I think, would have a big market.
I mean, come on. Matt, you got to know.
I'm all for
protein and bone and calcium.
I have soaked some infused bacon into vodka for Bloody Marys before. I learned that at the Rogue Tap House in San Francisco.
On the infusion side.
That's the infusion. Later. I'm saying it. There is something about meat and
liquor. Meat doesn't ferment.
It's got.
Or it does, but maybe you don't want it.
It's carrying some bacteria. It might be inimical to human health, and also the health of yeast, which is going to make the alcohol.
No pigtails in beer.
Probably not, but definitely infuse a pigtail in anything. In
meat, and infuse it later. I'll give you another thing.
Pickled pigtail.
Yeah.
Here's another one for you, Jimmy. So we're, of course, going to try to be environmentally conscious as much as possible, and we're going to, strain our used grains and send them back to the farms for animal feed. So you could do a 360 product where you had a pork shoulder that's been, soaked in the bourbon that it also ate.
Wow.
There you go. Okay. Do that to me when I'm dead,
thinking
please.
Outside the box.
Well, cheers to that. That's all I can say. Mike Kinsler, congratulations on being a licensed distillery in New York, Calpursy Distillery. We got some cool stuff going forward. Hey, let's give a shout out to it's goodbrasil.com. It's July Good Beer Month. It's been an awesome month. There's over 40 Good Brasil bars in New York City now. Some great events, including tomorrow night. If you want to meet beer media, go to the South Street Seaport Museum. There's going to be a beer book, blog, and video fest. Horst Dornbusch, who's an assistant editor from the Oxford Companion to Beer, writer John Hall, some great blogs like Beertography and BeerUnion.com, and some makers of beer videos will all be there. It's going to be a cool hangout, and there's also a lot of beer from like Coney Island and Dogfish Head and Thomas Hooker. That's going to be you can check it out, goodbrasil.com. I think it's $10 also, which is crazy, but it's something that no one's done in the Northeast. And it's a bunch of beer media people that are going to be there. Goodbrasil.com. Check it out. And next week is Good Beer at 82 Mercer. It's one of the New York City July Good Beer Month events. So a lot of good stuff. Go to goodbrasil.com. We're really proud of this month. It's our fourth year doing July Good Beer Month. The mayor has given us a proclamation every year in New York that July is Good Beer Month. We feel like we handle it responsibly. But we also have some damn good events, and every bar has had some really cool stuff. Justin, what have you done in July at Sycamore to celebrate July Good Beer Month?
Last or 2 weeks ago, we had Barrier back. We did a a crazy like burger barbecue and just had six of their beers on tap. And actually this Saturday we've got Captain Lords coming by.
That's awesome. And Jen, Blind Tiger, what's going on Sunday again?
Peekskill Brewing. Jeff O'Neill. So we get to actually try, you know, the beers from his new project, which is really exciting. I can't wait.
That's awesome.
We've heard about a lot of them, and we had a couple on the show when he came in last time, but to taste more of them should be a treat, so come by.
Anyways, check out goodbeerseal.com. All the Good Beer Seal bars have great events always, and July Good Brew Month is meant to highlight them. And anything else, a secret new thing coming up September 8th, you can find it on Good Brew Seal. There's going to be a Barrel and Kegs event. It's going to be some of the New York area breweries celebrating September, and they'll be at the Rockaway Beach Concessions. It's going to be very hip. You can surf and drink beer with some brewers. Again, check it out, goodbrewseal.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. And again, thank you to the goodbrewseal.com. Thanks to Michael, Justin, Matt, Greg, and Jen for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator Brett Thompson in Seattle, and engineer Joe Galarraga. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. Right.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Whiskey's too rough, champagne costs too much.